I'm Ruby Ryder. Welcome to Pegging Paradise podcast number 171 on October 17th, 2017. Changing the world one ass at a time. If you enjoy and appreciate my work and you want to help me spread the word about pegging, consider becoming a patron of mine so I can spend more time doing all the cool stuff that spreads information about pegging everywhere. Just go to patreon.com/rubyrider or click the support my work button on the right-hand side of my website. And remember, an extraordinary and carefully curated selection of body-safe, non-toxic toys can be purchased from the Little Black Dress of Pleasure products. Entice Me. All you have to do is go to enticeme.com, #RubyRider, and be sure to use the coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase. That's RYDER. You will be supporting Pegging Paradise with every purchase that you make. Welcome to Ruby's AMA, everybody. What's an AMA? It's Ask Me Anything. So I solicited questions from all of you lovely listeners, and I've got a whole list of questions to answer, and it's terribly exciting. The last time I did an AMA, I checked back in my records, was July of 2014. Oh my gosh. So more than 3 years ago. And that is number 87, if you have any interest in going back and listening to that podcast. So we have a whole list of questions here. It's, like I said, quite exciting. So let's get started. When you are with a partner, do you more commonly fuck him or get fucked? Or else do you usually switch off? Who fucks who first? Well, when I'm with a partner, it really totally depends on the partner. sometimes I get fucked and sometimes I fuck him. Is it equal? Again, it really depends on the partner. Typically, I don't engage as much in getting fucked unless I am more intimate and more connected and the partnership has been going on longer. It really depends on the partner. That's the answer to that. When I have a deep, lovely partnership that I've had for some time, when I have one of those, I think it is more equal. You know, sometimes I fuck him, sometimes he fucks me. But like I said, haven't had one of those in a while. So, okay, next question. Have you ever pegged a woman? Would you? Okay, let me correct the misconception about the word pegged. Pegged does not mean you just put a strap on and fuck somebody. That's not what the word pegged means. Pegged is a specific word that only means a woman putting a strap on and fucking a guy in the ass. That's the only thing it means. It doesn't mean fucking another woman in the ass. It doesn't mean anything other than that definition that I just stated. So there is no way that I can peg a woman because that's not how it works. Have I ever used a strap-on on a woman? No, I have not. Women are really not my thing a whole lot. I enjoy touching. I enjoy kissing them occasionally. There's a few women in my life that I enjoy that with, but it really never goes beyond that. I don't have any kind of urges to jump them and do sexual things or have them jump me and do sexual things. Just not my thing. And then the follow-up to that is, would you? Again, not really interested in women all that much, except for the kissing and cuddling. Okay, next question. Do you enjoy pegging porn? I do. I do enjoy pegging porn. It's not my favorite kind of porn, but I do enjoy it. And sometimes I find some that are just really, really erotic. But honestly, if I am watching porn simply for utilitarian purposes, shall we say, to get off, I watch gay porn is what I watch. I have a fascination with pegging porn because I'm totally into the whole pegging thing, right? So I like to share those clips with my listeners and readers, but I also, you know, look at it with a bit of a discerning eye, I suppose. I look at it and think about, you know, if they're portraying it well, if it... There's such a difference between the amateur clips and the professional. And the professional, I really don't have a whole lot of interest in. Every once in a while, I'll find one that is a professional clip that's not bad. They do a pretty good job, but it's rare. It's the amateur clips that I enjoy the most. Okay, and then here's another question. Would you ever remarry? Wow, that's an interesting question. Would I ever remarry? I've been married twice, after I divorced my second sexually incompatible husband is when I sort of looked at my life and my lifelong, since I became sexual anyway, fascination with pegging and my lack of doing anything about it. And I thought, if not now, when? But, you know, backing up to that statement about I divorced my second sexually incompatible husband, I can't put all the blame on them at all because I really hadn't let myself out as a sexual being. Would I remarry again? Back to your original question. Maybe, you know, I don't have a whole lot of interest in remarrying again. Taxes are kind of cool when you're married. But right now, I have discarded the notion of finding the one. And instead, I am embracing non-monogamy, and I am committed to interacting with every person in my life from a space of honesty and integrity and authenticity. So instead of trying to find one person to fill all my needs, what I'm really much more interested in is having more people in my life and enjoying the particular gifts that that guy can bring. So, yeah. Would I ever remarry? Sure, I might, but it would have to be someone who was okay with non-monogamy and maybe polyamory. That is all conjecture and hypothetical. I think that I'm more interested in non-monogamy rather than polyamory. And the definition in my mind being non-monogamy is you have other sexual partners, but you don't have a really deep relationship with more than just one person. But it's hard to say until I get there. So I follow a group on Facebook that is about polyamory, and I talk to people a lot about polyamory. For a long time, I listened to Polyamory Weekly. It's a pretty awesome podcast. She does that every single week, and it's an amazing feat. She's done so many podcasts. Her name is Cunning Minx, and she does Polyamory Weekly. So I used to listen to that. I'm fascinated with human relationships. I'm fascinated by how society has dictated so many boundaries and rules that really don't seem to be working. I am fascinated and dismayed a little bit by how everyone seems to default to monogamy. And at the same time, how monogamy doesn't seem to be working very well for so many people. When you look at the statistics of how many people have affairs and are on the down low and do things that their partners don't know about, can you really say that monogamy is working? So, yeah, would I marry again? Maybe. I guess that's a maybe. That's the answer to that question. Okay, next question. Have you ever considered directing or producing pegging porn? I have. I definitely have. I think that I might have a really good eye for what would come across well on film and what wouldn't. The logistics of that and the financing of it is what prevents me from jumping in. But, you know, there's so many different projects that I want to do right now, and that's further down on the list. Might I do it someday? I might. Because I have these tapes that play in my head that I envision. Part of when I write erotica, I do have a visual going in my head. But I have these tapes that are kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was this erotic little clip that was like this, and it started off this way, and it ended this way? Yeah, absolutely, I think about that. So someday, I might, someday. Next question. When do we get to play the music for you for your first pegging gangbang or Lucky Pierre? So I am not someone that really enjoys having sex with a lot of people. So I'm not sure if I would ever do a pegging gangbang. I might. The Lucky Pierre is something a little bit different because when I picture if I want to add someone to the bedroom, so to speak, even though, you know, we all know that we don't only have sex in the bedroom, but just for the sake of saying it that way, when I think of adding an extra person to the bedroom, it's a man usually because the thought of two men with me, and especially two men who are into each other as well, that's definitely a turn-on for me. That's on my list. And it's not like I've never had a threesome with two men in my life. I have. But at the same time, they weren't into each other, A, and B, I really wasn't the person that I have come to be. My sexuality had not been unleashed, shall we say. I had not taken the reins off. So yes, the Lucky Pierre, I would like to do that, because one of the things that I really enjoy is after a period of time and I stop doing the, okay, he's not gay, he's not gay, he's not gay, which any of you who have listened to all of my podcasts know that I started out rather militant about that, because it's such a strong misconception that sexual orientation is somehow connected to the area of your body that you enjoy having stimulated, where pegging is concerned. So, really wanted to push back against that, and in doing so made the big mistake of not leaving any room for bisexual men. So I have been with men who have had bicurious leanings, and when they fantasized about being with a man, a lot of times it included me sort of to be there, to reassure them, to guide them, to even to the point of the erotic scene of, you know, I'm gently pressing the back of his head while he's taking a cock into his mouth for the very first time. So I like that whole interplay of encouraging that bi-curiosity thing. So the Lucky Pierre, yeah, I'd like to be doing that, absolutely. Pegging gangbang, maybe, maybe. I think I might do it somewhat the way that Michelle did it, who I interviewed in podcast number 146. The infamous pegging gangbang podcast is sort of like, you know what? This is a person who has a fantasy of a pegging gangbang, and I would like to help them make that come true, as opposed to it being something that just really totally gets me off. So yeah, I might. Lucky Pierre is higher up on the list than the pegging gangbang. And believe me, I will let you guys know. And I will play the music for myself. Perhaps that's an idea. All right, next question. After 150 plus episodes of the podcast and many years in this pegging community, what have you learned now that you wish you would have known then? Wow, that's not just a one thing answer. The first one that pops into my head is what I just spoke about the bisexuality and embracing that and realizing that you can't make blanket statements that are black and white, of course. One of the other ones that ties into this whole bisexual thing is, okay, the two main fears of women when guys approach them about pegging, the two biggest misconceptions are, number one, he's gay. The other one is that if I fuck him, I'm going to turn him gay. Okay, so to the second question, I used to say, oh goodness, no. If a guy is straight and you fuck him in the ass, then he's always going to be straight. It's not going to like change his sexual orientation. Get out of here. Well, again, nothing is black and white. There have been one that I can think of, maybe two incidences that people have written to me about, whether it was friends of friends or happened to them themselves, I can't recall at this point, of a couple where they start doing the pegging and he realizes he's gay and says, okay, I think I just need to go be gay. So is that really, 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 really rare? Yes. Can it happen? Yes. Can it happen that a man has submerged his bicurious leanings and those are awoken when you fuck him? Yes, it can. And then it's really up to the couple to talk about what they're going to do about that. Are they going to leave it in fantasy land and that kind of thing? So, stepping away from the teacher for a moment, that I'm like the compulsive sex educator, right? And I'm explaining all this. The answer to the question is, I wish I would have known that, and I wish I would have presented it differently. Because not only in the first example did I not leave room for the bisexual men, but I didn't answer that other question well. I didn't address that misconception well. Yeah, it's possible that he can want to explore men after you fuck him. Sure, that's a scary thing to admit. I do mention it in podcast number 112 that, you know, you're going to have to talk to your partner about this. Is he going to have bicurious leanings after you fuck him? Maybe. Talk to him. That is one of the first things, that whole subject of bisexuality and bicuriosity, that I wish I would have gotten a little bit better in terms of presenting it to you all. One of the other things that I did not do as well as I wish I would have in terms of presenting it to you all is, what stops men from pegging? It wasn't until I sat down with my lovely friend in Colorado, Paul, who did me the favor of allowing me to pick his brain ask any question I wanted about pegging. It was really quite a gift. And I'll never forget how he said the biggest fear that men have is that women are going to tell. And that was the beginning of my understanding of a whole bunch of things surrounding the pegging formula, if you will, because so many things are attached. There's the aspect of Brené Brown's TED Talk about conflating weakness with vulnerability, and you're never, ever, ever supposed to appear weak if you're a man in this society. And as we all know, the people listening to this podcast, vulnerability is an essential component of pegging. So to allow yourself to be that vulnerable could be misconstrued as weakness by your partner. And then there's also the whole thing society does with men about the stupid shit about being penetrated makes you less than, and you get your man card taken away, and you must appear masculine more than anything else. You must always, always be masculine, right? And you can't be masculine if you're allowing someone to penetrate you, which is a sad misogynistic fact of how the fucking society deals with sexuality. However, I wish I would have known the extent of that and how difficult that can make it for men to step over that line and say, yes, I want to try this. Because in the beginning, I used to just say, well, just tell him that, you know, a combined orgasm with penile and prostate stimulation can be like 10 times as powerful as any orgasm he's ever experienced. It should be that easy, right? Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all. For some men, sure, they might jump at that. But other men, ooh, there's a lot of emotional hoops, a lot of hoops to jump through that have to do with what people might think of you, how much you trust your partner, and is your partner capable of holding space for you when you are vulnerable, when you have let all those walls down, and when you may even have an emotional reaction to what's happening, because we've talked about that, how sometimes emotions can be connected in there. Tears can happen, you know, all kinds of things. So do you trust your partner enough to hold space for that? Lots of things connected to it. It wasn't that simple. I presented it as being very simple, and it wasn't. So that I wish I would have known earlier on, so that I could have treated the men with, I don't know, more kid gloves. And not even like treat them with kid gloves. What I wish is that I could have known all of that in the beginning, so that I was more of a reassurance person. I was more of a foundation, encouraging them to let go of the shame. And also that I could talk about all of these factors to kind of put it out there so that they would understand more of the push-pull inside of them. And they could make a better decision about whether to step over that line with their current partner or not. So yeah, that's another one. What else? I've learned to hold space for people who think differently than me. And that's like a, you know, I say that statement and it's kind of like, duh. But here's what I mean. I recall writing the article that I wrote about pegging and intimacy and basically saying, you know, a lot of intimacy is involved in pegging. So this is why, even though I write erotic stories about, you know, pick up at a bar and take him home and fuck him, those are fantasies. Does it happen occasionally in the world? Of course it does, because nothing is black and white. However, it is a very intimate act. And especially what I just talked about the men, you know, letting you in and all of the what they have to get past to trust you and be vulnerable. And while society's telling them you can't be vulnerable and all this crap, you know, all of that involved, that means that you are probably going to be seeing more couples who have a deeper relationship and are more intimate practicing the pegging act. And it's not just a, hey, I want to experience pegging and I got a hot body, so come and fuck me. And that goes into the whole pegging ad things. So that's the reason I wrote the article about pegging and intimacy, is because I saw so many guys trying to get pegged by leaving ads like that. And I was sort of trying to explain it to them. And one of the things that happened was I posted this up on FetLife, and on FetLife, you get all manner of people who enjoy all manner of things, and some of them are very, very different than what I enjoy, but, you know, that's the wonderful thing about FetLife, is that there's so many people there that enjoy so many different things, and, you know, rock on if that's your deal. So one guy got on that thread, and he commented and said, you know, that's not how I work. What gets me off is I enjoy being treated like a thing. I enjoy being treated like I don't exist and just being used for her pleasure. That is what totally gets me off. So if there's intimacy, quite honestly, that destroys it for me. Wow, that was a waker upper. And I said, wow, thank you for letting me know that. And then, you know, knowing that it was safe, a couple of more men joined in and said, yeah, that's the way I work too. So I'm really careful sometimes when someone makes an assertion, like they send in a question or comment or something like that, and they say, well, you know, pegging is always a very intimate thing. And I say, for you, not for everyone. So I've worked very hard since being woken up by a couple of those to go, okay, this is how I experience it, and that may be how you experience it, but it's not how everybody experiences it. And I really try and hold space for everybody's different flavors, if you will, of how they love to do this thing we call pegging. Okay, so the next question, and this is from the same person, says, what was the famous Ruby Rider's biggest fail? I'm sure lots of fans consider you infallible, but I'm sure there was a time where even you went, well, that didn't work out the way I planned it. Okay, so I actually, the answer to that question is the bisexual thing. That was the thing I fucked up the biggest. And here's what happened. A good friend of mine came to me and said, okay, so, you know, really enjoy your podcast. And he told me all the reasons why he really liked it, which was sweet. And then he said, but after being married for X number of years, I had two things I needed to come out to my wife about. And honestly, your podcast made it a little bit more difficult for the second one, because the first one was about pegging, right? And the second one was about being bi-curious. So he said, your podcast actually made that a little more difficult because you just kept going on and on and on about, no, pegging's not gay, it's not gay, no, he's not going to switch sexual orientations, no. So that was a waker-upper. That was the catalyst that made me sort of back up and look at the whole thing a little differently. And as some of you may know who have been longtime listeners, I then did a podcast all for the bisexual guys. That was really a cool one because I invited them all to write in and tell me their story. And it didn't make any difference what their story was. And there's no judgment there. In other words, if they were on the down low with men and they were married at the same time, okay, I still wanted to hear about it. And I made this forum for them to tell their stories, if you will, and how pegging was a part of their life and how their bisexuality or bi-curiosity was a part of their life in terms of, you know, openly in their relationship, only for fantasy, all that kind of stuff. That was a way cool podcast, and I'm overdue to do one of those again. You know, I love to take the themes, as many of you have noticed, you know, the bisexuality and the crossdressers and the this and the that. So yeah, that was my biggest fail, though. I feel like I really screwed up. So I tried to make it up to the bisexual and bi-curious guys. And I think I've done a great job since then. What other fails? Because, you know, we've talked about the bisexuality thing a fair amount here. What other fails? You know, this may seem kind of basic, but it's so true. I completely underestimated the amount of men who are really interested in this versus the amount of women who are interested and or knowledgeable in pegging. I totally underestimated that. I was unprepared for the flood of men who were seeking pegging, but also I was a little unprepared for the flood of men who were so eager to talk about it. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that this podcast is successful, despite my rather spotty record of being really, really regular with these podcasts, and I've gone back and forth and gone through personal stuff and all of that, is because this is a forum where you can finally talk about the thing that nobody's supposed to talk about or that you've packed away forever. And here I am reassuring you that it's all okay. So, you know, I didn't know that all you guys were out there. I can't really say it's the biggest fail, but I did underestimate it, and I kind of underestimated it. I suppose the fail part comes in because I underestimated how many guys out there are so hungry for the experience that I didn't realize how many emails I would get about, you know, from the crude, please fuck me, to where do I go to find somebody? I mean, that's a constant. My best guess is that I get at least 5 or 6 of those a week. And sometimes more. about where can I find a partner? I really want to experience this. So yeah, I was a little unprepared for that. Now I've got it down and I just send him the links. But I spent a lot of time answering those questions. And I also spent a lot of time trying to say, okay, look, you don't look for a pegging partner like this. I mean, do you just walk up to a woman in a bar and say, hey, will you fuck me? I mean, just because you're sending a letter, an email, and it's virtual, and you're not there right in front of the person, I love the rule about if you wouldn't say it right in front of a person, then it's kind of rude to say in a letter. And you know, okay, to a certain extent, it's not rude because I am Ruby Ryder. I'm the pegging person. So if you're going to ask a pegging question, if you're going to be really upfront with sexual desires and things, maybe I'm the person that you want to do that to. But you don't know me. So state your desires, state what you're interested in, but don't come on to me. So yeah, that whole part in there about how much men want it and the coming on to me part and me having to do my boundaries and everything, that was a difficult one. That was a bit of a fail until I figured out how to handle it. So, okay, next question. On a more personal note, what does your daughter think about her mom being Ruby Ryder? You know, I asked her this. I said, hey, I got a question, and it involves you. So I can either answer it or not answer. It's up to you, because I always give her that option. And she said, it's kind of cool. And which, you know, totally warmed my heart. She's 23 now. My daughter does identify as asexual. So her next comment was, I think it would be a little more cool if I was a more sexual person. Which, okay. So there's the answer to that one from my daughter herself. And then the follow-up question to that was, how did you break it to her? So here's what I did. I was very careful with all of the stuff I was working on. Until she got to be about 16, I would hide my computer screens, you know, all of that stuff, trying to be very careful. Now, she's like any teenager cruising around on the internet. You never know what they have found in the porn world and what have you. So I'm sure she'd had a lot of exposure to a lot of things. But what I did was nothing overt. It wasn't planned well or anything. I just stopped hiding things. And things were on my computer screen, and I'd written things, and they were left out on my desk, and stuff like that. So when she was curious, I think she probably looked at some of those things. So, yeah, that's kind of how I broke it to her, is I just sort of let it happen organically. I must say, though, I was one of those parents who, when she became sexual, when she started exploring sexuality to begin with, I unfortunately was a parent who never had a good model for that when I became sexual. I never got the talk. I never got anything. As a matter of fact, I recall what happened is my oldest sister read me some stupid book about how babies are made. You know, and then they show you that stupid film when you're like in sixth grade. And it's like, really? This is called sex education? You know, whether it's the school or your parent, right? So it was all learning on the fly. You know, so I didn't want that to happen for her. So what I did was I gave her a book. Because I was not comfortable enough talking with her about it, which I kind of regret. I really do. But at least I gave her the book. What was the book? The book was a good one. The book was called Sex is Fun. And it's written by the people who used to do the podcast Sex is Fun. And it's in a graphic novel format. And it's really cool because it makes it really very non-threatening. A lot of great messages in that book. So at least I gave her that. And you know, now we can talk very openly about all kinds of things, so it's not a problem. But there you have it. That's how I broke it to her, so it wasn't this big thing, really. Okay, next question. You have talked about your experiences in the BDSM world alongside your pegging experiences. I'm wondering, if you could set up the perfect scene for your satisfaction or enjoyment, in what order would you do things like beating, pegging, and other activities? That's an awesome question. Well, it does depend on the partner again, because the way that I work when I am engaging with someone in a BDSM way as well as a pegging way is that I enjoy it when they are enjoying it. So I'm not having fun if they're not having fun, right? So it really depends on their preferences and things. If I could ignore their preferences and assume that everything I was going to do to them they would love, then I would probably tie them up. Beat them, and when I say beat them, It's not just picking something up and hitting someone. It's really not. I don't think I've talked about this that much on this podcast, but impact play is a skill. It's an art. It's a dance. I have done massage for 28 years, so I read bodies really, really, really well. And all the nuances are captured. So I can see the twitch. I can hear the sigh. I can hear the whimper. I can, you know, all of that I see and I hear and I take it all in. So I read bodies really, really well. So back to impact play. There's a method of impact play that I call stair step. I was introduced to this in the very beginning when I started experimenting with impact play, which is a catch-all term for using things to hit people with, right, in the BDSM world. And I made some mistakes in the beginning, and I went on to FetLife and said, okay, so I made a mistake and hit this guy too hard, you know, it was my boyfriend at the time. And so somebody helped me out here. And this guy sends me to this article. And I will put a link in the Linkorama for everybody. And I believe it's called something about endorphin release with impact play or something like that. So here's kind of the basic description of it. You do your impact play, you warm up, you know, it's an increase in intensity from slowly warming someone up to then making it more intense, but you do it in steps. So you do it to the point where they're starting to squirm a little bit and it's like, whoa, that's really hurting. And then you stop and you give them a break and you continue to touch them. During that period of time, what I really like to do is do very erotic things and like run my fingers over their cock or their balls or things like this, because I love crossing the wires of pain and pleasure. And so then when you start up again doing impact play, the endorphins have had a chance to release and you can hit them a little bit harder. So as you see, this can ramp up. Now, people enjoy impact play for a few reasons. Some people love that endorphin release because you can really get flying on endorphins. Some people just love the pain because they're masochists and they love it. Other people that I play with love it because they know I like to hit them because I'm a sadist. And so they enjoy that I'm having a good time. So it's almost like an act of service. It's like, I want whatever you want, which is really fun. So the impact play, yes, that's how that looks for me. It's not just I'm going to pick up a flogger and wail on this person. There's an art to it and there's a dance to it. And I take it very seriously. I put music on. I do it in time to the music. You know, it is really very much a dance. And then I fuck him. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's the basics. There might be some other things in between, teasing, you know, different stuff. But those are the basics that will make me very happy if I just stick to those. And it's my scene and I can set it up any way I want. Okay, here's the next question. Do you like getting fucked as much as you like pegging your partner? Oh, yes. Lots of people are really curious about that. I do. And I reserve that for relationships where I am much more intimate with my partner. It's such an interesting thing because, you know, we talk about pegging a lot on this podcast and how intimate it is and how vulnerable it is for the receiver. Being penetrated is a vulnerable and intimate thing. And I have found that I'm more comfortable allowing someone to penetrate me when I've known them for a while, when I get to know them and I'm we intimate and we have a relationship and this is something we're going to continue to do for a while. I do not default to getting fucked like most people who have sex do. Intercourse is not my default. Interestingly enough, my default is fucking the guy. But of course, the guys who are interested in me are there to get fucked anyway, so you know. But it's an interesting back and forth, isn't it? Yeah, but I really do love getting fucked, absolutely. Okay, here's another one. You have revealed your dominant side and how you enjoy administering discipline and pain. Can you perhaps explain a little more exactly what the thrill for you is? My wife has an aspect to her I am trying to understand. She thoroughly enjoys spanking. I bought her a crop and a paddle, which she loved. She uses them, but sparingly. She says she'd really like to let loose, but is conflicted, not wishing to cause real pain or damage. I have no experience in this, but am very willing to explore with her. So any window you could open for me would be very much appreciated. Aha! So, one of the articles for you to read, sir, who wrote this in, would be that Stairstep article that I'm going to link to in the Linkorama. So now, can I explain a little more exactly what the thrill for me is? That's a difficult thing to explain. Why do I like hitting a guy with a riding crop or a flogger or a paddle or that kind of thing? I'm not sure I know how to explain it in words. I just know that it does thrill me. But let me speak a little bit more to her concerns about hurting and causing pain. Okay, so I mentioned in just the last question how I'm not having a good time unless they're having a good time, okay? So there's an extent to where you can play with that dynamic. Sometimes, if a guy really wants to please me, he will take a beating from me because he wants to please me. And I mentioned that as being one of the things that motivates a guy to receive a beating from me, is that he wants to please me. So if you wanted to please your wife, you could be like the good boy who takes the beating that she wants to deliver. Now, skill must be attained, so you need to explore it slowly. And if you're anywhere near a BDSM community, it's really cool to get a mentor. It's really cool to watch people do this so that you can get an idea of what it's like, as opposed to experiment on your own. Because here's my story. So, like, I had this boyfriend, and for longtime readers, that is the boyfriend that walked away and broke my heart, right? Anyway, he was my first person to explore BDSM with. And he's like, yeah, I'm totally down with this. Let's go for it. So he had a fantasy of the librarian, right? And so I dressed up like a librarian, had my little reader glasses on, put my hair up in a bun. So he bought me, at my request, this kind of hardwood ruler. And it was a ruler shape. It was this beautiful polished wood. And I think it was like black walnut. I now know that's a pretty intense instrument. Now, you can use any instrument and have it be something you use lightly or more heavily. You know, you can do the range with anything out there, but it is capable of causing more pain more quickly because it's a piece of wood. It's very different than a leather strap. It's very solid. You know, it gets down into the tissues more. It can cause bruising more easily. So anyway, there I am, and he's bent over my lap, and I've got this hardwood ruler, and I'm kind of hitting him a little bit here, a little bit there. And the very first time we ever tried this was, okay, I'll tell you the whole story. It's like he lied about his fucking age on the website that we met on, right? So once we started talking and kind of flirting on the phone and everything like that, I said, and there was this amazing moment where I said, I realized that he'd lied about his age, which is a pet peeve of mine. And I said, you know, you're going to have to be punished for that, don't you? And I was all serious, right? My voice was like that. And he kind of stutters and stammers and goes, well, yeah, I assume that, you know, the punishment would fit the crime. And yeah. And then there's this silent part. And I said, that was really hot. And he goes, that totally turned me on. Which was awesome, because in that moment, you know, we were being really open about what turned us on and what didn't. It was this lovely exploration of brand new for both of us. So the first time we ever got together, I had one of those like kids' plastic rulers, right? And so I can't remember. I gave him a bunch of strokes, had him count them, whatever. And he said, you were pretty easy on me. So of course, that experience was in the back of my head when, flash forward, here we are again. We're doing the librarian fantasy, and I've got the hardwood ruler, right? So I'm kind of smacking him with it and smacking with it. And then I just give him a pretty hard hit. And immediately his body stiffens, right? And the whole air changes around us, the energy. And I can tell that, oh, okay. And immediately also, I see two little red spots on his cheeks, right? So the bruise came up, you know, kind of like, just like that. Not huge or anything, but two little red spots. And so, you know, we stopped and we cuddled on the bed and everything. And he said, so I'm going to need you to put some reins on that inner sadist of yours. And at first I laughed and he laughed. And then I said, okay, talk to me about this. Get serious, you know, talk to me about this. And he said, I am totally down with exploring this with you. I'm having so much fun. And I just watched you go from 0 to 60 in about 2 minutes. I went, okay, alrighty then, got it. Now, speaking to that a little bit more, it's sort of like there's a part of me that really has this urge that wants to hit and wants to cause pain and Clearly, this would be the sadist, and it took me a while to embrace that word, believe me. Talk about negative connotations with words. Even if it's consensual, even if he wants it, even if he asks for it, even if he enjoys it. Still, the word sadist was something I really had to work hard to embrace. Here's what happens when I beat someone. There's always a part of me that is the sadist that's going, come on, come on, pick up that riding crop, which is a pretty intense tool as well. Happens to be my favorite one. Hit him hard with it. And I'm like, no, not yet. So it's like there's these, it's not warring factions inside me because they're not really warring. It's just that that sadist part is really pushing it, you know, driving the urge to come on, come on. And then there's the part of me that knows, no, these are the boundaries we work within. These are the rules that I know work the best. This is the way that I know I want to deliver this. And so you over there that wants to pick up the crop right now, you are out of line. So you just will have to wait. This is sort of like the inner conversation that happens. Not every time, and it's not quite that specific, but that's what happens inside me. I took great reassurance in knowing that he enjoyed it, knowing that he wanted me to do this. And whenever I engage with other people now, there are people who just absolutely love to get beaten. And those are really fun people to play with for me because I can kind of take the reins off and let loose. One particular guy at a femdom event down in Los Angeles who is what we call a heavy pain bottom in the community. He loves to get beaten. He has scars and things even. And I don't do that kind of play. Some people do. It's up to them. But one time I remember talking to him about how I'd had a really frustrating week. And he says, come to the event. Come and beat me. You know, I'll bottom for you and you can beat me and just take it all out on me. So I very intentionally packed only the tools that I knew I could swing the hardest and not cause any real damage. And that's exactly what I did. And oh my God, it was such a release of bad energy inside me. And I was just glowing afterwards. And he loved it. He absolutely loved it. So talk about a win-win in a very strange way, right? The whole world of exploring that is very interesting. I think, getting back to you who asked the question, that reassuring her that this is something you enjoy, keeping in good communication while you play and while you explore it, and maybe asking for things in between getting paddled or spanked or things like that. Like, you know, every once in a while, can you reach down and like stroke my balls or my dick or something like this? Ask for what you want so that it works for both of you and just see how that goes. Okay, let's see here. Moving on. I have had this question in mind for a while now, and maybe it's not personal enough or what you're looking for this episode, but I don't recall you addressing the subject in depth in any podcast. How does Ruby get it, Luby? Ooh, clever, clever phrasing there. Other than inserting and pressing lubed fingers into the rectum and on the sphincter, I'm at a loss for how to effectively and efficiently get the proper amount of lube into my ass. I do occasionally use refillable lube shooters to get some in deeper for dildo play, but I feel like they're not great for warm-up and that it can get lost if I don't aim it properly. With the finger method, I feel like more gets squeezed off the fingers than gets inside. I understand warm-up period should last several minutes, so usually there's enough lube in there by the time I'm ready for insertion of toys. But I feel like my warm-up periods become more about putting lube in the ass than relaxing into the session. I'm particularly curious about getting lube further up into the anus in preparation for dildo play, as my fingers seem sufficient for coating the area from the external sphincter to the prostate. And in case your other listeners haven't taken heed of your recommendation, let me shout a big hell yes to Slickwood Silk. Enough said. Okay, so this is an interesting question for me because, you know, the world of lube shooters out there, it's like, okay, if that's what you want, that's fine. I have never, ever used a lube shooter. I have never been overly concerned with getting lube further up the ass. I lube up my toy. I lube up the outside. I do foreplay with fingers and toys, perhaps smaller toys. And I just assume that it's going to be fine. And it is. So I have never had a partner say, you know, it doesn't feel like there's enough lube further up in my ass. So I don't know. You know, this is just my own experience. I don't feel like it's a necessity. And the only advice I have for you is to, you already use like a lube shooter type of thing and put it up inside you. That's just the best alternative that I can think of. I mean, I could think of other alternative ways to deal with getting it up there, like, you know, get a Fleet enema bottle, empty the enema out of it, put lube in there, and then stick the nozzle up there and squirt it in. But it's the same thing as a lube shooter. You know, the only thing I disagree with the lube shooters are that most of the time the lube in the lube shooters is fucking crap. So what you need to do is to get a syringe-ish sort of setup, and you can buy them empty, I don't know where, but you can, and then fill it up with Slickwood Silk or whatever good lube you're using, right? But I'm just, you know, I don't know how to answer that question because I'm not overly concerned about getting lube way up inside the ass. Perhaps it is a factor of bigger toy play, and that's where I'm sort of not seeing how essential it is. When you get into really big play or like fisting and things like that, there's other lubes that are actually better than Slickwood Silk because they have more of a greasy, if you will, consistency, kind of like Crisco, for those people who remember Crisco. It's more of buttery, if you will. And anyway, maybe that's why I haven't ever had that problem. I've never had a partner complain. There's not enough lube up inside me. I just put it on the outside of the toy, insert it, and every once in a while, I don't even withdraw the whole dildo. I just back it out a little bit and squeeze some more right where it's going into him, and it seems to be fine. There you go. Oh, and this person was so nice to say, P.S., I do love your new music. I find it makes me really hot and gives me mental images of spanks and whips and hip wiggling and thrusting. That's awesome. Okay, next question. I have a particular interest in how your upbringing and society in general discouraged exploring your sexuality more openly. I read that you didn't explore until you turned 50. That is absolutely correct. Now, how my upbringing and society in general discouraged exploring my sexuality more openly? Well, you know, not a lot of people were really open about sexuality back then. My family was more open than most. I did grow up from the point that I was sexual, which was 16, with Penthouse Forum on the coffee table, okay? It was not that big of a deal to have Penthouse Forum hanging around. And I'm actually surprised that my parents allowed us to read that. So, you know, me being all anally obsessed, it was quite convenient because I would just flip that magazine to the anal section because this is awesome. It has sections and it has an anal section. It's like, okay, that is the first place I'm going in that little book, that little magazine. So, yes. But society in general was definitely not very accepting of sexuality at all. And I got mixed messages from my dad because although he was a very sexual person in terms of he had his penthouses and his Playboys and that kind of stuff, he had his porn collection that we found later, just books, not movies, because those were a little bit more difficult back when he was alive, but he had a very hard time with his daughters turning sexual. It's just not unusual for parents to be really uncomfortable with the opposite sex child when they go through sexuality, to be very uncomfortable with it. So he gave mixed messages in terms of being a sexual person, not inappropriately ever, but then really not giving good messages about me becoming sexual. So that was pretty fucked up. That was something I had to work through in therapy and blah, blah, blah. That was not okay. And I think a large part of those mixed messages were why I squelched my sexuality for so long. I got the message that it really wasn't okay. So it took me a long time to even open up my mouth and ask for what I wanted, which is crazy, but it was real for me. So when I finally started doing that, then still all of these fantasies are suppressed and hidden. And then as I got older and got married the first time, I approached my husband with the idea. At first he was like, whoa, I don't think so. And then as I recall, to give him credit, he actually bought like an anal exploration kit, like a beginner's anal exploration kit, right? He bought that and neither of us used it. It was like a stalemate. It was like we were both too shy. It was so sad. I mean, really? Too shy, and it's sitting there in a box and we just never use it? I can't believe that that happened. And then the second husband, I kind of said, well, I'd really like to do this. And he just kind of really kindly but firmly said, no, I don't think so. And I was still of the opinion that what I wanted was so weird and different and sort of bad in a way that, you know, think back, I had been given messages that my sexual desires were bad. So combine that with it being really taboo in a really taboo area of the body and all that kind of stuff. When he said, no, thank you, I didn't have the confidence to persist and say, but wait, you know, this really turns me on. Can we check this out and just try it and see if we like it? I didn't have that confidence at that point. So after divorcing the second husband, then I kind of looked around and said, okay, if not now, when? And I decided, you know, for any of you out there listening who have turned 50, for me, it was really quite a marker of, okay, I better get my fucking ass in gear and start doing the fucking that I want to be doing, right? And I didn't know if it was going to happen or not, but I did know that I was willing to give it a try and jump in with both feet. And so that's when I took my erotic stories that I'd been writing all of those years, decades, people, decades, and I dusted them off and edited them and put them up on my blog. And then I realized that people weren't going to come to my blog unless I actually started writing things on a regular basis. So I did. And it kind of grew from there. And then I started podcasts a couple of years in. So that's how it's happened. And I have always been thankful that I decided at 50, okay, if not now, when? I had some really fortunate things happen, like the guy who built my first website is a good friend of mine, and he's gay. So he and I used to exercise a lot together. We would ride bicycles together, and we talked like girlfriends. I love it when I have gay friends who I can talk to like girlfriends. So I was talking about my dates and my wild experiences and learning about pegging, right? And so finally, he just kind of hesitated, and he goes, do you want some advice? And he kind of gave me the ins and outs, if you will, even though I didn't plan that pun at all, of anal sex, of male receptive anal sex. I remember some of the things he told me. He said, look, if you want a guy to fuck you, then have him fuck you first before you fuck him, because there's something about getting fucked in the ass that sometimes sort of short circuits us, and then we can't get it up after that. Some guys can, some guys can't. So, you know, you just tell him, I want you to fuck me, and you can't come, and then you fuck him after that and make him come any way you want, right? So yeah, he gave me some great advice, so that was pretty cool. Yes, and I've been exploring ever since then, absolutely. Ever since starting my Ruby Rider adventure. That's what I call it now. And now, here's what I call it now. I am building the Ruby Rider empire. I have a pegging empire, right? Okay, next question. What is your favorite position to peg your partner in? Totally depends on the partner. Absolutely. If I had to choose one, it involves my sex swing. Yes, and I've linked to that many times before, but I'll link to it again. It's a pretty awesome sex swing, and I love it because he can relax. He's right there. I can touch anything I want. I can play with his nipples. I can play with his cock. I can watch his face, and it's fairly effortless. It really is. Can't recommend the sex swing enough. Now, there is a real love in my heart for taking a guy from behind because of the power feel of it, because of the I fucking got you and I'm going to fuck you until I'm done sort of, you know, dominance thing. And I don't usually from behind default to doggy style. And the reason I don't is because my body is unusual in that it's very, very long from my hip to my knee. So it's very unusual that I actually match up body-wise well enough to have doggy style be a comfortable thing from behind. So instead, I have him lay over a cool, you know, sex furniture wedge or something and lay down and be far enough back so that his cock is hanging out over the edge of that wedge, right? In case I want to, like, pull out and play with his cock for a while. And then I just lay down over him. I do really enjoy that position because there's so much skin to skin. And that is something that the sex swing can't give me. So that skin to skin thing is really fun. And the power of it is fun. And sometimes I will put my legs on the outside of his, and sometimes I will spread his legs and put mine between his. And I can move up or down on him depending on what angle I want the dildo at. Plus, my voice is like right there in his ear. You know, it can be a very intimate thing in a different way than positions that allow for eye contact can be intimate. So, yeah, I would say that is my additional favorite for different reasons. Okay, next one. What combination of equipment gets you off the most when you are pegging? Well, okay, so here's the deal about me getting off and pegging, and I've talked about this on the podcast before too. I have not as yet had an orgasm while pegging. Now, a lot of reasons involved in that. Part of it is just me and how responsive I am, because different people are different sexually. I have never been easy to get off, so to speak. It's easy for me to get myself off, but maybe because of that crap I talked about giving bad messages from my dad about my sexuality, it's been difficult for my partners to get me off. So yay, enter sex toys. Sex toys are fucking awesome. But the point being, what I believe is involved in being more successful at getting off yourself is the ability to move and do things in a way that are just for you, that feel good to you, right? I'm such a giver in sexuality, in coupling, that it's a real effort for me to turn that off, turn the thoughts of that off, turn the urges off, and just move and do something for me. However, I have been experimenting with that and having some fun. And I would have to say that the winner in the equipment territory, the equipment arena, if you will, would absolutely be the few singles, the few single dildos. You know, the double is, it's not that big of a deal for me, but I really like the way that the base of those few singles nestles right there between the vaginal lips, right up against my clit. And then that Wee Vibe Tango vibe that you put in there. Yeah, that puts some very nice vibrational pressure in there. So I've come close, but I haven't quite gotten there. So believe me, I will be playing the fucking music when I get there, because I do believe it's a when. It's a matter of having a nice, comfortable, consistent partner is, I think, what the deal is. So yes, there you have it. So you actually said combination of equipment. I would have to say my favorite harness of all is the Aslan Minx, because it feels so sexy on. I feel sexy with it on. It's yummy, smooth, soft leather. It's just amazing. So yeah, that contributes mightily. Plus, it holds it on firmly so that there's no give. The fabric harnesses are awesome, and they're really comfortable, and they're washable, and they're totally, totally cool. But when I am trying to press that vibrating part of that dildo against the right spot, and I'm fucking him at the same time, I don't really want to have that, you know, eighth or a quarter inch little space that happens when you pull back and the elastic stretches a little bit. It's such a small thing, but I think that what I need to get me off is so particular that maybe that's why. Other times, the fabric harnesses rock, but if I'm trying to get off, yeah, I really like the leather harnesses better. Okay, you know, that's it, everybody. That was a lot of questions. Thank you so much for sending them all in. And then at the end of this podcast, I have a couple of things I want to talk to you about. The first is such a fun, fun, fun thing. So on the last podcast, if anybody heard that, you may have heard a guy say, so, you know, we were looking for pegging information, and then we find the patron saint of pegging, Ruby Ryder, right? So one of my listeners, who has some pretty awesome Photoshop skills, this is the letter that he wrote attached to the picture that he sent. I swear I heard someone mention Saint Ruby in the latest podcast, so I fired up Photoshop and got to work. Hope you enjoy. So that's going to be the photo that's on this podcast, and it's hysterical, it's awesome, it's funny, it's great. I love it. Yes, that's going to be all over the place in a little while, because it's just, it's phenomenal. I love it. And Brian sent that in. So Brian, thank you so much. That was really quite a gift. Made my day, made my week. It's just, yes, smiles and laughter. Thank you. And I'm not even going to give away, you know, what it looks like. It's just, yes, I look like a patron saint. I do. I've got a couple of things in my hands that you're just going to go have to look at the picture to see. Okay. So a couple of other announcements here. One is that I've changed something on the website. Here's what happened with the t-shirts. The t-shirts, I can't sell the t-shirts because where I tried to sell the t-shirts with them making the t-shirt with my logo on it, they took months and months and months and finally said, okay, we're not going to approve this. I mean, it's like, what the hell? Because it was rather circuitous. I would try and go on as not someone who was a creator and try and buy a shirt, and I couldn't find a way to do it. So I wasn't sure what wasn't working. You know, I do have the t-shirts there that just have words on them, but not that awesome logo. So anyway, the point being, they wrote and said, yeah, we can't do this because this is adult material and la la la. So that link is no longer there. I'll figure out t-shirts one of these days, but it's not happening right now. So instead, here's what that link will take you to. I am going to be doing podcasts that I would love input on in the future. And when I do those podcasts, they're going to be at that link. So upcoming podcasts is what the link says. And when you click in, it will tell you specific topics that I plan on covering in the future, and especially ones where I really want input. For example, on November 14th, I am going to have another women's podcast. So I want to put everybody on notice. All the women out there, all the peggers, please send me your stories, and they can be anything. They can be what you like the best about pegging, what it's like for you, what your favorite pegging fantasy is, what your husband does when you peg him, what your boyfriend asks you to do that you're not sure if you should, how you feel about it, what you love about it, what you don't like about it, your favorite story about it, anything. You can write your story and send it into ruby@peggingparadise.com, or you can actually call and tell your story and leave it there at 805-500-6544. But I would love to hear from all the women. Part of the reason that I'm doing another women's podcast is because it just is so nice for the men to hear so many women out there telling stories about how much they like it and why they like it. And it gives them hope. It's reassuring to them that, yes, there are women out there who love it. Because there's a lot of guys out there looking and looking and looking for women who like pegging, and they're not having any success for a variety of reasons. But still, that's the facts. That's the situation for them. That's their reality. So to be able to tune into a podcast and hear a whole bunch of women going, oh, yeah, this is fucking hot, and we love it, and here's why, and here's what we like to do, and here's what we like to wear, and this is what our partner does, and yes, those are really fun stories for all the guys to listen to. So ladies, send them in. Send your stories in, send your comments, all of it, any of it. And make sure that you have all of that stuff in. So I'm going to air the podcast on the 14th. So you're going to need to have those stories in by the 11th. So all the women's stories need to be in by November 11th. And if you forget that, just go over and click on that upcoming podcast link. It'll have all the information there. And the upcoming podcasts that I welcome input in other areas are going to be there as well. So cool, new podcast area. Here's another announcement. This is about the 805-500-6544. So here's the deal. This is a Skype number, okay? And as many of you may know, Skype got taken over by Microsoft. So I had this lovely outgoing message saying, hey, this is Ruby Ryder, and leave your question and I will answer it. And it was awesome. And then I started getting people calling in who sounded a little confused and saying, I'm not sure if this is the right number. And I'm thinking, how can they not know if it's the right number? So I called it from my mobile phone, and I didn't hear the outgoing message. So then I went into Skype, and I thought, well, how can I re-record that? What the hell? Where did it go? Well, it turns out that fucking Microsoft eliminated the ability to have a personalized outgoing message. Fuckers. So, you know, I've had this number for a while. I pay for it once a year. It's not an expensive number. It's not that big of a deal. But seriously, I can't have an outgoing message. Goddamn Microsoft. So here's the deal. I'm just telling you that I'm reassuring you. If you have the number correct, you have indeed reached Ruby. It's kind of weird because it's sort of like, I want to make sure that this is the right number before I leave personal, highly personal information here about my sexuality and questions and what have you, right? So I do apologize, but that is the situation. 805-500-6544 is absolutely my number, but you're not going to get any outgoing message. You're going to get some nice British-sounding lady asking you to leave your message. So that's the deal with the phone number. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blog, my podcast, my erotica, and the forum. On pegging101.com, you're going to find informational pegging articles only with no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps, which you can find a sampling of under the tab Follow on my website for both Android and iPhones. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you like. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. Remember, if you order any new toys from enticeme.com, use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase. Send your questions to Ruby at peggingparadise.com. No question is too complicated, too counterintuitive, or too cock-centric. Many listeners are going to learn along with you, so be bold. Throw those questions in my mailbox or call me at 805-500-6544. Thanks again, everybody, for all the fun questions. I really had a good time with this AMA. And thanks for downloading and listening, everybody. You rock. Happy pegging.